Chapter 9. Over on the other side of the USA, Rachel was having a lovely morning. She was playing Mermaid Power and had already found a new area of the map she had never seen. Rachel spent the morning trading seashells with different starfish and other merpeople so she could get the wood she needed to start building a shelter in that part of the map. She planned to start a new little settlement there and use the gold it generated to fund her other main settlement in the center of the map. She always played the game like that. She would go to an unexplored part of the map, and she would start a new settlement. Then she would build it up over time, and use the money and food it generated to make her main settlement stronger. She never sent anything back to the tiny settlements she founded. If they were attacked by underwater monsters, or were destroyed in an earthquake, she would just let them go. Rachel did not care. She would rather create a new settlement from nothing than rebuild one that had been destroyed. As Rachel played, she continued to relax more. On the wall across from her, she had screens flashing numbers and graphs of the money she was making. By that point in the day, she had made $1,248.26. More money was ticking in at every 8.5 seconds. She also had several screens up monitoring the complaint messages. By now, she created filters to vastly reduce the number of complaint messages that made it through to her. She included filters with the words, small fee, 2 cents, unknown charge, small charge. From time to time, the messages appear on the screen, but most she ignored. Her programs were set up to divert the most serious ones away from the normal complaint system at buygreatjunk.com to her own system. Rachel would scan the message, look for the amount of money that they were owed, and double it, say from 4 cents to 8 cents. Then she would send a check to the person at the address they had written on the complaint message, or the one that was linked to their account. All the checks she wrote came from accounts that she had established in the Cayman Islands or the Isle of Jersey. The name of the accounts read, the BuyGreatJunk.com Company, or A BuyGreatJunk LTD Company. Even though these accounts were not at all connected with the real BuyGreatJunk.com site, when the person receiving the check looked at it, the name was close enough and they did not care. It wasn't until she started to read these messages that she truly understood how important BuyGreatJunk.com was to some people. It seemed that for some people, the website was both the only place where they felt safe in the whole world and their main source of income. So yes, they did look very, very carefully at all the receipts for the items that were bought and sold, and they followed up immediately when anything was out of the ordinary. Once Rachel sent a check to someone, she took their name off of the list of accounts that would be randomly targeted for stealing the small amounts of money. She figured that anyone who was diligent enough to check once would probably check every time. She did not need that kind of hassle. As the day went on, Rachel became more and more comfortable with how her plan was progressing. She was pleased with how she was managing the flow of complaints and the flow of money as it came into her various accounts around the world. Actually, she had a series of collector accounts set up in hundreds of online banks. In those banks, she existed only as a number. They had no proof that she was a real person besides the money that regularly flowed into and out of her accounts. When any single account collected between $450 and $500, she would automatically transfer that money to one of her other accounts in a different country. This was designed to happen almost randomly, but still within tight controls. She did not want to be so regular from each account that a pattern was established. She wanted to avoid a pattern because she knew that law enforcement computers and scanning programs looked for patterns. They typically look for patterns in money coming into or leaving the United States, especially if the money was going to certain suspicious places. Confident that her plan was succeeding, Rachel paid less and less attention to her mermaid and more attention to her accounts and her code that was running on the BuyGreatJunk.com site. She slowly changed the random amount taken per transaction from 1 cent all the way up to 11 cents. She began to steal from more and more sections of the website. She added the audio and video site to her code, and immediately she saw a large increase in the income she was generating. She added her code to the classic clothing and children's clothing sections of the site. This addition, paired with the increased income per transaction, brought in a huge increase in the amount of money she was receiving. By the time she got hungry for lunch and left the house to walk to the taco truck down the street, Her accounts were receiving about $393 every second. She left the house, bought a delicious fish taco with spicy red sauce and a lime. She walked down by the ocean and watched the seagulls fly close to the water, then land on the shore and walk along the beach. Her lunch break took about 45 minutes. While she was at lunch, she made about $1 million. That's enough money to buy 4 or 5 houses. The day progressed, and Rachel began to pull more and more of the small complaints away from the official mailbox at the company. She programmed a steady stream of income to fill up the accounts while the small 8 cents or 10 cent checks came from. As the day continued, Rachel began to relax. She went for a run in the park. She washed her truck and went shopping for a new watch. By the time Rachel was ready to go to bed, she was feeling pretty confident, and her plan was going to work. Rachel went to sleep that night around 10:30 p.m. By the time she woke up the next morning at 7:48, she had already stolen about $12.7 million while she slept. That's enough money to buy 42 houses. This really was an evil, evil plot. Celia and her mom rode in the back of the big black SUV, and they pulled into the back side of the Pittsburgh International Airport on Lindbergh Drive. The SUV rolled slowly up to the gate at the entrance to Defense Ave, which marked the entrance to the U.S. Defense Department base. The base is located on the land with the Pittsburgh International Airport. The driver of the SUV slowed at the gate for the guard to check his identification, but the guard did not bother. "Chuck, you on a move-in down there? Good to see ya," said the gate guard. Then he pressed the button for the SUV to pass without looking at Chuck's identification. They drove slowly through the airbase. Celia noticed that they were surrounded by low buildings. She could see that on the tarmac there were a lot of really, really big airplanes with 4 propellers, 2 on each wing, and big doors in the back. They were parked at an angle on the side of the runway away from the city. Their SUV continued to drive very slowly until it came to the far edge of the tarmac near where a small plane was parked. 2 men in uniforms were loading bags into the back cargo compartment of the plane. A tall lady stood straight as an arrow beside Miss Sarah, just beside the wing of the aircraft. She wore a black hat and shiny sunglasses. She was resting her hand on the wing as she looked up at the sky, and she was talking and laughing with Miss Sarah. Their SUV stopped. Mr. Chuck hopped out of his seat, came around to the back passenger door, and opened it for Celia and her mom. Then he helped them both out of the vehicle. As they got out of the SUV, he said, "Good luck, Tiens. Well, I hope you'll catch them criminals. Yens, and just walk over there towards Miss Sarah, and I'll put your bags on a plane for Yens." Celia and her mom walked over to Miss Sarah. Miss Sarah squatted down so she could be eye level with Celia. "Are you ready to do something you will never forget?"
"You know it."
They all walked up the little stairs onto the plane. The passengers sat in the back and the lady in the shiny sunglasses sat in the front. As they were all climbing on board, the lady in the sunglasses came over the intercom speakers and announced, "Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am Captain Kendra Simpson. I will pilot this aircraft today along with First Officer Michael Riedel. Our goal is for you to have a nice, relaxing trip to California. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy the flight." With that, First Officer Riedel grabbed a leather strap on the inside of the staircase door, and he pulled it up hard. The door slammed shut with a click. Once it was in place, he snapped 2 metal locks on either side of the door to lock it. Then he walked up front to the cockpit with Captain Simpson and strapped into the co-pilot seat. Celia was so excited she could hardly believe what was happening to her. Her first visit to an FBI office. Her first ride in a car being driven by a professional driver. Her first flight on a private airplane in her whole life. And she was in a different part of the airport than most people don't even get to see. She had no idea what was about to happen next, but she knew it would be memorable. Once the plane was up in the air, Celia began to look out the window and think about what they were actually going to do. She did not think to bring a game, a book, or anything else, so she was pretty bored. It was not a commercial plane. There was no flight attendants offering drinks or food, and there was no entertainment system built in for movies. Instead, Celia looked out the window and thought, "This must have been how my ancestors entertained themselves on plane rides across the country." Celia's mom sat beside the aisle and was asleep within 3 seconds of the plane taking off. It was the longest she'd been away from Silas for his entire life. The freedom of not having to take care of him every single minute allowed her to relax and catch up on a little of the 2 years of sleep deprivation she suffered from. Celia sat, looking out the window, wishing for something to do. All of a sudden, she felt a tap on her shoulder. She turned around to see Miss Sarah with her bright smile. She did not say anything. In fact, she pressed her finger to her lips and gestured her head at Celia's mom to mean, "Shh, she's sleeping." Instead of speaking, Miss Sarah gave Celia a book, The Beginning Guide for Junior FBI Field Agents. It was a thin book, a pamphlet, really. As Celia turned the pages and began to read deeper into the instruction manual, she got a clearer picture of just how dangerous and important Miss Sarah's job was. She also began to think about how she too might someday make an impact in the world and help other people. These thoughts, along with the excitement that she already felt, kept her from sleeping at all during the flight. 5 hours later, the small plane touched down in San Diego in a slight winter breeze. When Celia and her mom walked off the plane and onto the tarmac of the small landing strip, they were met with a lovely blast of ocean air. They had landed at the U.S. Naval base called Point Loma, and they were just a few feet from the ocean on all three sides. To Celia's surprise, the temperature was lovely, not bone-splittingly cold like it was back home. When they left Pittsburgh, it was 5 degrees, which is 25 degrees below freezing. When they landed, it was 55 degrees. Even though that is not warm, it's 60 degrees warmer than Pittsburgh, and it felt wonderful. The warmth was not the only thing that caught her attention. The smell was amazing. It smelled sweet and a little bit like lilacs. Celia's mom looked at her and said, "Oh wow, smell that jasmine. It must be all around here. It smells like we're in the middle of a big field of it." Jasmine, thought Celia. What a perfect smell. I need to plant some of this in our backyard next summer. It smells incredible. Celia and her mom grabbed their little rolly bags from the back of the plane. There were 3 SUVs waiting to pick up the group. Celia and her mom rode with Sarah and Mr. Lee in one of the SUVs, as one of the local FBI agents drove them to the FBI station's guest house and auxiliary command center. Miss Sarah sat up front and chatted with the officer as they wound through the freeways heading to the Pacific Beach neighborhood. Celia could hear them talking from her spot in the back seat. "That's right, Sarah. She has been in the house since you contacted us. It appears she is still awake and making changes to the code she installed on the buygreyjunk.com site. It's working well. She's on pace to steal over $33 million each day with that code." "If only that code were really working," laughed Sarah. "Yeah, seriously," said the other officer. "I don't think she has any idea she's being set up right now. All the code she wrote and all the money she thinks she is stealing is not real." Celia chimed in from the back seat.
"What do you mean it's not real?"
Sarah chuckled as she responded. "As soon as we realized what was going on, we contacted the security team at buygreyjunk.com. We have been working with them to be sure that from Rachel's perspective, her plan is working perfectly. However, in real life, she is not stealing anything. All the money she thinks she is stealing is not really in her accounts. It is an illusion. I can't wait to see her face when she realizes it has all been a setup."
"Did you figure out who's doing this?" asked Celia.
"Yes," responded Sarah. "The criminal's name is Rachel Stone. She was my classmate at Caltech. I've known her for a long time." Celia was shocked.
"Really?"
"She and I studied together under the same major professor," Sarah continued. "Rachel was a whiz kid. She started at Caltech when she was just 16. She did all 4 years of high school at once, using correspondence courses in different states. The last month of her freshman year of high school, she gave the guidance counselor a stack of straight-A transcripts from 30 classes in 4 states. She enrolled in the summer program at Caltech 2 weeks later."
"How did she go from one of the brightest 16-year-olds in America to a super criminal?"
"I think those two things do not exclude each other," Sarah answered. "In fact, I think it is her incredible mind which tempts her to make money the easy way. She and I both studied with Dr. Elizabeth Washington. She's a wonderful woman and a natural-born do-gooder, a real save-the-earth kind of person. Rachel never understood this and made fun of Dr. Washington in private a lot. Rachel called her own way of doing things lateral thinking. What she meant was thinking of the fastest way to get from point A to point B. ignoring all of the standard social conventions and morals. In fact, Rachel once confessed to me that she did not actually pass all of those high school classes in the same year. She simply hacked into the grading systems from the different states and gave herself straight A's. She chose four different states because they were the easiest systems to hack, not because of the academics. Celia pressed on, and her mom started to feel awkward about her daughter's tone.
When was the last time you saw Rachel?
She was kicked out of Caltech very quietly after she embezzled quite a lot of money with an email scheme. She wrote messages pretending to be a lawyer in Africa looking for an heir to a large bank account. The victims of the scheme sent a few $100s to a bank account in Nigeria to process paperwork for the bank. Rachel had a system set up where the money was moved from the bank to other locations and then disappeared. Even after Caltech kicked her out of school, the police and the FBI could not prove anything. They never found the money, and they could not tie Rachel legally back to the money. By then, Dr. Washington and Rachel were hardly speaking to each other, so Rachel did not have anyone to stand up for her at the higher powers of the school. She left Caltech on a sunny Friday morning, and I have not heard from her since. Celia piped up from the back seat.
What is Rachel doing now? What was all of that data coming from her house yesterday?
Then Sarah and the other officer, Mr. Dan, told Celia all about the code that Rachel was using to steal money from the buygreatjunk.com site. Celia asked,
what about her plan to steal tax money?
Oh, she shut down all of her other code that she had going so she could concentrate on this scheme, Dan said.
Really? I wonder why.
Hard to say, said Dan. Maybe she didn't want to get caught with a small crime and ruin her chances of a big crime. That did not seem right to Celia. But what did she know? She was just a kid, and this was her first criminal investigation. She thought that she would leave that part to the grown-ups who worked for the FBI. Just then, the SUVs pulled up in front of the San Diego FBI station's guest house. It was a plain-looking house in the middle of a Pacific Beach neighborhood in San Diego. It was close enough to the ocean that you could smell the unmistakable freshness of the sea. Celia loved that. There were tall palm trees all over the neighborhood that swayed and rustled in the ocean breeze. Celia loved that too. When she walked in, Celia soon realized that this was not an ordinary house. Everything was set up so that it looked normal from the street, but behind the front rooms were three sets of stairs leading down several stories. All of the rooms went basically straight down and out in several directions. Celia guessed that the house could comfortably sleep 100 people if it needed to. In the middle of each of the underground floors were technology rooms with a lot of computers and big screen projectors, just like Celia had seen in the conference room in the FBI office in Pittsburgh. It was very late, but Celia was starving. She was happy to see that someone from the San Diego Bureau office had grilled chicken, ribs, and fresh fish for their visitors from Pittsburgh. They had a pile of warm tortillas on the counter in the kitchen, along with limes, sour cream, avocados, black beans, and chopped tomatoes. All of the visiting agents ate the food hungrily. It all tasted so fresh and delicious. Even the limes did not taste super sour. They had ripened on the tree in the backyard. As Celia and her mom ate, Celia caught her mom staring at her. Celia, I can't believe this is happening. It is totally insane we are here.
I know. I can't wait to see what happens tomorrow.
It is going to be wild, said her mom. We better try and get some sleep. Celia and her mom took their bags to their room. It was down on floor negative 10, which meant that it was 10 stories underground. That's about 100 feet below ground. She and her mom each had their own comfortable queen bed in the same room, with a bathroom attached. Since it was so far underground, there were no windows, no sound, and no light. Once they turned the light off and closed their eyes, they both fell asleep in an instant. Even though they were excited, they were really tired. It had been an intense couple of days. The next morning when Celia woke up, the little bedside clock in her room said 6:42 a.m. That meant that it was 9:42 back home in Pittsburgh. By the time that Celia blinked her eyes awake, her mom was already showered, dressed, and ready for the day. She told Celia she was going to go up and get breakfast, and Celia should pop on up after she took a shower and got dressed. 20 minutes later, Celia took the elevator up to the main level. The house was buzzing when she emerged from the elevator. The first thing she noticed was the light. The house was flooded with brightness from all the skylights. Every room had a skylight, and all of the windows were open, letting the crisp ocean air fill her lungs. For a moment, she forgot what was going on and felt as if she was on vacation at the beach. The kitchen table was full of fresh fruit from the backyard of the house. Oranges, limes, lemons, grapefruit, and avocado. Inside the fridge were 3 dozen eggs and a pile of Munster cheese. There were also taco leftovers from last night. Celia was a big fan of having hearty dinner food for breakfast. She had a red snapper taco with cabbage and lime from last night's feast for her breakfast. She also had an entire orange and half an avocado on a toasted fresh tortilla. Everything tasted so good she didn't want to stop eating. Finally, when she was so full she felt like she was going to burst, she pushed her plate aside. As she was finishing her breakfast, Sarah walked in, sipping her coffee from her big red mug. "Good morning, sunshine. Are you ready to catch your first criminal?"
"Yes, I am. Let's do this."
Celia's mom was at the table with her and sat back with a pleased look on her lips. She was ready to see what the day had in store, but she was also a little afraid that something bad would happen and Celia would be in danger. "Okay," said Miss Sarah. "We've been watching the house all night, monitoring the flow of data into and out of the house. No one has come or gone, and nothing unexpected has happened all night. Fake money from the fake transactions seems to be rolling into Rachel's real bank accounts all around the world. By crossing so many international borders with her crimes, she's setting herself up for potential prosecution in about 17 countries on 4 continents. "Yeah," piped Dan. "The only place she's safe is Antarctica." As the day unfolded, little by little, Celia's mom felt more at ease. The FBI had a fleet of cameras already installed all around Rachel's house and in her neighborhood. They had 3 drones flying around the area giving live views of Rachel's house and the surrounding area from above. The little flying planes were pretty amazing, but these were the ones that were like little airplanes, so they could see what was happening in an area around the house. They did not have the drones with many helicopter rotors that could drop down and look into Rachel's windows. That type was illegal because of how easy it made it to invade someone's privacy. However, this frustrated the FBI because they wanted to see inside Rachel's house and know what was happening in there. Sarah was working to get them access to Rachel's house. She had filed a request to search the house, and she was awaiting approval from a judge. If the request was granted, it was called a search warrant. Judges take search warrants pretty seriously, since the FBI is asking for permission to go into someone's house and look through all their things for proof that they committed a crime. Eventually, the permission for the search warrant came at 10 a.m. Once the news came, all the FBI agents suited up in what looked like battle gear. They had on thick black vests and combat boots. They all also carried big guns that looked like war guns. They filed out of the house and into the SUVs that had reappeared on the small street. Rachel and her mom were 1 floor underground, in the dark room covered with screens. Each of the screens showed black and white video as it came in from the various cameras and drones in the area. It was oddly quiet. There was no sound from any of the cameras, only pictures. The only thing that Rachel heard was the clicking of keyboards and the slurping of coffee as people drank from their mugs. Miss Sarah and Mr. Lee were in the room with Celia and her mom. Miss Sarah was on a headset, and she was communicating directly with Mr. Dan, who was the leader of the search raid. She turned on the communications between she and Mr. Dan so the sound filled the quiet room. The room was filled with the sound of his breathing because the mic on the inside of his bulletproof vest was very near his mouth. Within a couple of minutes, the 3 SUVs pulled up to Rachel's house. Celia could see it happening on 3 different screens at once. Once they pulled up, the SUVs opened up and officers poured out in battle gear. Miss Sarah switched 2 of the screens to the officer-mounted cameras the squad leaders had on their helmets. They were now seeing the same point of view that the officers had as they approached the house. Celia heard Mr. Dan announce, "FBI, open up!" She heard a loud bang and they knocked down the door. Then Celia saw blackness in the house and heard a lot of confused sounds. The camera bounced slightly with each step as Mr. Dan walked in the hall. She guessed that the other FBI agents entered the house and shouted to each other as they looked in each room. Then bang, bang, bang! Rachel heard Mr. Dan scream, "Ah, down, down, I'm hit!" Someone shouted in the chaos. The screens in the control room showed the squad leader's cameras and they went black. Chapter 10. Celia heard Mr. Dan shout, "Ah, glitter! There's some kind of trigger that covered us all in super sticky liquid. Maybe glue! And pounds of glitter! Silver, purple, and pink glitter!" "Glitter?" said Miss Sarah. "That is definitely the same Rachel I remember. Always playing tricks on people." "Glitter?" said Mr. Lee.
"Ah, glitter!"
Then it all made sense to Celia. She knew Rachel was long gone. One of the other agents came to Dan's camera and wiped it with her thumb so that the agents in the control room could see inside of the house.
Miss Sarah! Rachel is not in the house. She's headed out of the country. You need to turn your team around and have them go to Mexico.
Celia, what are you talking about? Asked Miss Sarah.
It's the MMM. It's the Mysterious Mermaid Manifestation.
The what? Asked Sarah.
In mermaid power, the MMM is the fastest, best, most powerful way to escape a huge situation where there is no other way out. A master player might only use it once a year. Only in a desperate situation.
Like when your house is about to be raided by the FBI, added Sarah.
Exactly.
The FBI teams did not leave Rachel's house. They went ahead and served the warrant on the house and searched it for evidence. They found Rachel's pet mermaids that were happy to see other people than Rachel. Even if all the officers were dressed like robots wearing their black battle gear. They entered her large command room, and it was filled with smoke and the smell of burning metal. The agents put on gas masks just in case. They found her wall of monitors and her pink mermaid power computer. In a corner in the front wall of windows overlooking the ocean was her comfy chair with the mermaid armrests. As the agents continued to search, they found there were not a lot of belongings there. The closet in the bedroom did not have many clothes. The refrigerator was empty, except for some French fizzy water and a part of a salad in a restaurant takeaway container. The cabinets in the kitchen only had one cup, a small plate, and a bowl. The FBI agents carried 24 computers and various other mechanical devices out of the house, but they did not need to bother. All of the computers had been wiped clean. The same mechanism that triggered the glue and glitter upstairs sent thousands of self-destruct signals to all of the computers. This had completely destroyed the motherboards and set fire to the hard drives. The machines the agents confiscated were still smoking and smoldering, and they might as well have been bricks. They were no longer functioning computers. Once the agent certified that the house was safe, Sarah allowed Celia and her mom to go to the house with her. They drove the short distance and arrived at the location in a couple of minutes. As they walked around, they got a strange feeling. Something was missing. What was missing? The volunteers from the Southern California Sea Mammal Sanctuary arrived and lifted the dolphins out of their tank. The dolphins began to lose their minds, moving their heads and clicking. Bertha, the strongest dolphin, escaped from the volunteers and crawled on the floor to the kitchen. She hit the door to the utility closet with her nose. As the volunteers struggled to lift her up, one of them opened the closet by backing into the door. Once the door was ajar, Bertha nudged the fake wall of shells over and over. Just before the volunteers carried her away, Bertha managed to knock the fake wall of shells loose, and it opened up, revealing the hidden tunnel. "What in the world?" said a volunteer. He called over one of the agents to show her what Bertha had found. "That is crazy," Sarah said. "Well, at least I don't have to feel bad about allowing her to escape. She's had this plan for a long time."
"But how did she know that we knew?"
"Rachel's one of the most intelligent people in the world," responded Sarah. "She must have seen something that let her know that we were on to her."
"But what?" asked Celia.
To find the answer, we need to rewind to the day before. Just about the time that Celia, her mom, and Miss Sarah were getting on the plane in Pittsburgh, Rachel was realizing that something was wrong. It was too easy to steal money from buygreatjunk.com. Something did not feel right. Everything she did in the buygreatjunk.com system worked. It was like they had removed all the security around everything she touched. "They know I'm in here," thought Rachel. To test her theory, she raised her per-transaction amounts to super high levels. She finally reached the levels of 0.185 to 0.262 cents per transaction. Then the money kept flowing in, and she knew she had been discovered. She was certain a raid on her house was going to come next, but she just didn't know how soon. At 10:30 p.m., she got up from her computer and she went to her room. She took a shower and put on comfortable clothes. She grabbed a light rain jacket in her purse, which contained her passports and $50,000 in cash. That's more than enough money to buy two new cars. She had no phone. She walked downstairs through her huge planning room, past the dolphin tank and into the adjoining kitchen. She stepped into the utility closet and shut the door behind her. She slid back a fake wall of shelves and it revealed the entrance to a small tunnel. She hopped up into the tunnel and the shelves snapped back in place behind her. It was like she had never been there. She crawled through the tunnel for 2.5 hours. She had it constructed shortly after she bought the house, for an occasion just like this. She reached the end of the tunnel just before 1 a.m. She popped her head out from a manhole cover and the sidewalk on La Jolla Boulevard, near the corner was Westbourne Street. She waited at the bus stop for 5 minutes and hopped on the number 30 bus and took it to the Gas Lamp Quarter neighborhood. She reached the Gas Lamp Quarter at 2 a.m. She walked into the lobby of the Elegant Hotel on the corner of West Harbor Drive and Pacific Highway. She wore sunglasses even though it was night, and she carried a designer handbag. This disguise helped her fit right in with the nicely dressed clientele at the hotel. No one thought twice about her sitting in the lobby for several hours, sipping coffee, reading the pages of The Economist magazine. Because she occasionally looked at her watch, they assumed that she was waiting on someone. At 4:30 a.m., she walked out of the hotel lobby and waited at the corner for 10 minutes. And then she caught the express bus to Tijuana, Mexico. The ride took 30 minutes. After 20 minutes, they crossed through the U.S.-Mexico border. A U.S. Border Patrol agent boarded the bus, looked at everyone's passports going from seat to seat, and greeted each passenger in English or Spanish as he thought appropriate. When he reached Rachel's seat, he said, "Buenos dias." "Good morning, officer," Rachel responded. She removed her passport from her purse and handed it to the officer. He looked at it, handed it back to her, and said, "Have a great day in Mexico." With that, Rachel Stone became an international fugitive who had successfully fled the United States. Rachel reached the central bus station in Tijuana at 5 a.m. She enjoyed a delicious breakfast from a vendor with a cart outside the station. She chose a fried donut covered in cinnamon and sugar called a churro. This came with a hot cup of fresh cocoa. As she dipped each bite of the churro into the hot cocoa, it soaked up a bit of the chocolate and made the cinnamon and sugar come alive in her mouth. The smell of the breakfast reminded her of why she loved Mexico so much and why she was happy to be back. Rachel bought a first-class ticket on the next express bus to Guadalajara, Mexico, in the center of the country. The ticket cost 2,330 Mexican pesos, which is about 138 U.S. dollars. She also bought the seat beside her for an additional 2,330 pesos, just so that she wouldn't have anybody beside her asking her questions. In the gift shop of the bus station, she bought a travel pillow, earplugs, a little blanket, and 2 bottles of water. The bus ride took 11 hours, but since she had a first-class ticket, her seat folded all the way back so that it was flat like a bed. After she boarded the bus, she chatted for a few minutes with the people around her. She opened one of her bottles of water, took a big drink, and set it in the empty seat beside her. She got out her travel pillow and blanket, inserted her earplugs, and reclined her seat all the way back. She was asleep within 10 minutes of the bus getting on the road to Guadalajara. Rachel slept all the way there with her arms around her handbag. Back in San Diego, at the FBI station house, the mood was not as festive as it had been the night before. The agents from Pittsburgh were all trying to recreate what went wrong. Some were on laptops. Others were in the operations room downstairs in front of large monitors. Several still had a lot of gold, purple, and pink glitter in their hair from Rachel's house. Celia felt completely crushed, and it showed on her face. Sarah walked up to Celia and her mom. "How are you two doing?"
"How did we miss her? She slipped right through our fingers."
"That's funny," said Sarah. "Our FBI bosses in D.C. are asking us the same question. All I can say is that it isn't over. We are pretty sure she's in Mexico. And we have great cooperation with the Mexican police on cases like this. Rachel is in all of the international databases. There is no way Rachel Stone would be allowed to leave Mexico and go to another country."
It just seemed so wrong. She was right there.
Celia pointed at one of the screens, which still showed a camera shot of Rachel's deserted house on the cliff, looking out over the Pacific Ocean. Being a success is not about having everything go perfectly all the time, said Sarah. It's about learning from your mistakes and getting better. And that's what we're going to do here. Rachel arrived in Guadalajara after 11 hours of sleep, feeling refreshed but starving. Instead of getting something to eat, she took a taxi directly to the Guadalajara International Airport. She arrived at the airport at 8:30 p.m. She walked up to the ticket counter and asked for a first-class ticket on the 11 p.m. flight to Havana, Cuba. The ticket agent charged her $1,300 for the ticket and scanned her passport. Everything is set for your on-time departure, Miss Castillo. Will you be checking any bags with us this evening? No, said Rachel. I'm traveling light. It's just a quick trip to visit my family. Rachel casually walked through the security line with her first-class ticket. She was treated respectfully by the Mexican guard screening passengers as they passed through to the boarding area. While waiting for her flight, Rachel devoured a freshly made torta de milanesa, which is a specialty in Guadalajara. It is a sandwich with freshly baked bread, lots of lettuce, tomatoes, ripe avocado, and a thin piece of pork chop that's been coated in breadcrumbs and fried. Once she had eaten her dinner, Rachel looked around at the boutique shops in the international departure area of the airport. She found a lovely purple and silver dress that fit her perfectly, and some stylish, comfortable shoes to match. She walked into the dressing room, tried them on, paid for them at the register of the boutique with U.S. dollars and cash. Since she was not using a credit card, Rachel knew it would be impossible for the FBI in America to track her. After she bought the lovely new clothes, she gave her old clothes to the lady at the checkout line and asked her to take care of them. The lady at the register took them, folded them, and stashed them under the register. They were nice. She would take the clothes home, wash them, and give them to her daughter. It was 9:30 p.m. Pacific Coast time in San Diego, and Celia's heart was still broken. She was folding up her clothes and preparing to go home the next day with her mom on a commercial flight back to Pittsburgh. They would not be flying back in an FBI plane, since there was no urgent need for them to get anywhere as soon as possible. All the excitement and hope that had carried Celia when they came to San Diego felt long gone, even though it had only been 24 hours since they arrived. Celia just kept turning over in her mind.
Who was this Rachel Stone and where had she gone?
At exactly that moment, Rachel Stone was walking through the passport check at the Mexican Customs preparing to leave Mexico and board a plane to Havana, Cuba. Rachel handed the Mexican Customs agent her Mexican passport, which said her name was Elizabeth Castillo. As she left the country, cameras in the visa line captured images of her face. These images instantly flew across the internet to the Mexican Federal Police servers and ran across the algorithms checking each person's facial proportions against known criminals in an international database. Rachel's photo instantly lit up a hit with the U.S. Consular Consolidated Database of U.S. photos taken for visas and passports. As her face flashed across the desk of an analyst at FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C., who compared her photos from the Guadalajara airport with her known passport pictures from her U.S. passport, the analyst typed, "Confirmed," into a box on her screen. This told the system that she had looked at both sets of photos and thought that the person leaving Mexico really was the same person who the FBI was looking for those crimes in San Diego. Sarah Rodriguez and Dan immediately received calls on their cell phones. They ran outside the FBI station house, jumped in a car, and they were on their way to the airport 2 minutes after they received the call. Within an hour, they were in a small jet flying to Havana, Cuba. Rachel boarded her flight at 10:30 p.m. and enjoyed the three-hour flight in the first-class cabin. She watched a movie, read a magazine, and thought about how nice it would be to enjoy the warm sun and beaches in Havana this time of year. As she walked off the plane in Havana, she did not notice Sarah and Dan. They just seemed like two more of the hundreds of people on flights arriving in Havana on the sunny December day. Sarah immediately recognized Rachel and led Dan in her direction. This does not seem like someone who is an international fugitive and has stolen tens of millions of dollars around the world, thought Sarah. I guess you can never tell what someone is capable of just by looking at them. As Rachel walked through the airport, she slowly began to feel that she was being followed. In a couple of minutes, there were four Cuban police officers surrounding her. Sarah and Dan were immediately behind her. She turned and looked at Sarah. "Sarah?" Rachel said with surprise. "Hi, Rachel. Long time no see. Sorry we have to meet like this. Then Sarah repeated the script that she had to say. Rachel Stone, we are with the FBI, and you are under arrest. But you can't do this. I'm in a foreign country. I'm in Cuba. The U.S. doesn't have an extradition treaty with Cuba. The Cubans won't send me back to America to be prosecuted, said Rachel, as the Cuban authorities were putting handcuffs on her. Sorry, said Sarah. Things are changing quickly between the U.S. and Cuba. We just signed a two-way extradition treaty. They don't want our criminals, and we don't want theirs. Bad luck for you. It was just signed last week. You know, you really should keep up with these things. With that, Sarah and Dan and four Cuban officers walked Rachel out to the FBI plane and put her on board. Within 40 minutes, they were on their way back to Washington, D.C. to put Rachel Stone in jail, where she belonged. The next morning, Celia and her mom woke up early and took a taxi to the airport. Celia did not see Sarah before she left San Diego, and that made her even sadder. She could not believe how things had gone so badly. When they arrived at the airport and checked in for their flight, Celia's mom could tell that she was feeling pretty down. Tell you what, how about we go to the bookstore and I will buy you any book you want for the flight back to Pittsburgh, said Mom.
Okay.
Normally, there was nothing Celia liked better than going to a bookstore, especially an airport bookstore. But this morning, everything just seemed so completely gray and hopeless. She couldn't get excited about anything. Celia walked into the bookstore and made her way towards the science books. As she did, she passed a stand with newspapers. From the corner of her eye, she thought she saw two familiar faces. She walked backwards two steps and took a good look. On the front page was a photo of Sarah and Dan, with a short lady standing between them. There she was, Rachel Stone, looking confused as she stepped off the plane early in the morning near Washington, D.C. The headline read, First Successful Extradition from Cuba in 60 Years! Celia kept looking, and she realized that each of the major papers had the same story on the front. Celia's mom bought one of each and read them on the way home.
Mom, I can't believe after all that, this is how they caught her.
I can, said Mom. It's poetic justice. After she used computers and software coding to steal money from so many people, it was a computer system that matched her face and caught her. Even a fake passport and traveling to two foreign countries didn't let her sneak past law enforcement. They both laughed and gave each other a big hug. 6 hours later, they were back at their house in Murraysville, Pennsylvania. The FBI had paid for a professional maid service to come and clean the house from top to bottom, wash all the dirty clothes, cook two meals, and leave the food in the refrigerator. They did that to make up for confiscating and destroying all of their electronic devices. The FBI also replaced all of the electronic devices with new ones. Cameras, cell phones, television, etc. In Celia's room, where her handmade computer had been on her desk, instead, there was a stack of books and a catalog filled with computer parts. On top of the presents was this note. Celia, I'm so glad our paths have crossed. You are awesome, and we could have never solved this case without you. Check out these books with other languages. Java, .NET, C, ADA, Python, Groovy. Now you'll be able to use the best language for each type of program that you need to create. Let me know when you have questions and I'm happy to help. Order anything you want in the computer parts catalog. Use the account number 984736. Let me know when all of your hardware arrives and I will come over and help you build your next amazing machine. I'm sure we'll work together again soon. Your friend, Sarah. Celia flipped through the stack of programming books. She would start to devour them tomorrow. For now, she returned to her love of new hardware. She grabbed her pen, the parts catalog, and her flashlight, and climbed into her bed. She made a tent with her blanket, snuggled inside, and started to slowly turn the pages. Her mind was imagining how she could fit the computer parts together in strange ways. Some things never change.
Devil danced in empty pockets, well, he'd have a ball in mind. With a 9-foot grand, a 10-piece band, and a 12-girl chorus line. Well, I'd raise some loot.
Hi there, it's Justin here. Just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to our sponsors, Twin Engine Coffee. Check out their amazing story at twinenginecoffee.com. Thank you to Andrea and Colin for your coffee. We love you so much here at the Taylor household. Any listener to the Celia Science and Anna Art audiobook, you can have a free offer from Twin Engine Coffee. Just go to twinenginecoffee.com and enter the word science in the comments section when you check out, and you'll receive a special surprise from Andrea and Colin. So that's S-C-I-E-N-C-E, science, whenever you make your checkout in the comment section from twinenginecoffee.com. Thank you so much.
Three-piece suit and give him one dance for a dime. If the devil danced in empty pockets, he'd have a ball of mine. Diablo Motors had a hell of a sale downtown yesterday. When word got around there was no money down, and take years and years to pay. Well, I got there, the lot was bare, but the salesman said, hold on, for a little cash I got a two-tone Nash out there behind the barn. Well, if the devil danced in empty pockets, he'd have a ball in mind, with a 9-foot grand, a 10-piece band, and a 12-girl chorus line. Well, I'd raise some loot in a 3-piece suit and give him one dance for a dime. If the devil danced in empty pockets, he'd have a ball in mind. Well, they say the debt is a bottomless pit where the devil likes to play. I'd sell my soul to get out of this hole, but there'd be hell to pay. If the devil danced in empty pockets, he'd have a ball in mind, with 9-foot grand, a 10-piece band, and a 12-girl chorus line. I could raise some loot in my 3-piece suit and give him one dance for a dime. Well, if the devil danced in empty pockets, he'd have a ball in mind.